We did not weave the web of life. We are merely strands in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. These words are attributed to Chief Seattle, who was leader of the Suquamish and Duwamish tribes in the northwestern United States, and spoke or wrote them, it's a little unclear now, around 1855. A century and a half later, we would do well to remember those words. A century and a half later, we do not seem to have heeded them particularly well. A century later, I think that Chief Seattle would be surprised. I think he could not have imagined what industry and the use of resources, natural resources, turned to energy for our benefit, fuels and internal combustion, what the use of these things would have done to that tender and intricate web. Nor would he be able to imagine, I don't know if we can, what might happen when we run out of these resources. But unlike Chief Seattle, that's something many of us might live to see, and all of us need to live to worry about. This intricate balance, this tender web of life that we are a part of. In fact, I think an intricate part of, an important part of. When a spider weaves a web, every strand is vital to the whole. But some threads are more for the catching of insects, and if you snag one, although it's felt in the whole web, it trembles through the whole web, it's okay, and that one can be repaired. But there are anchor threads that the spider weaves first. And if one of these is destroyed, the whole thing begins to collapse. If one of these threads begins to not do its part, the whole web will simply unravel. And I wonder if humanity, in our place in God's web of life, if we are like those anchor threads in some ways, not because we are the first or the most important or anything like that, but because of the power and the impact that our species has on all of life, and that if we are not doing our part, the whole web will just collapse. We didn't read from Genesis this morning, but you probably remember the story of God creating the earth in the second account, in the second chapter of Genesis. God then finishes and kind of hands it over to humanity. And the word that we often use is that God gives dominion over the earth. That's the word that's in that same translation of the psalm, that God has given dominion over the earth and all of its creatures and all of its life to humanity. But I think a better word is probably responsibility or stewardship, caretaker. And that as those anchor threads, those important threads, those caretakers, it is up to us somehow to cherish and treasure, and yes, to use, but use for the benefit of all the resources and the abundant blessing that's all around us. In fact, this is who we are to be, I believe. That's part of what it means to be the children of God. Like the older sibling who's charged with looking after the younger siblings. It is a responsibility to care for and nurture the rest of life around us and not to abuse or destroy it. Paul writes in his letter to the Romans that all of creation is eagerly waiting for the revelation of God's children. All of creation is eagerly waiting to see if we will become the caretakers God has called us to be, if we will become the light that Christ called his disciples to be, if we will become the children of God we are meant to be. Paul says that creation is in pain, groaning, crying out in pain. We too are in pain, waiting for this, waiting for the children of God to step into who they are called to be, in part to step into our role as caretakers, as stewards of that with which God has entrusted us. We've been planting some seeds in anticipation of the warm weather, which seems to have shown up already, but I'm not going to put them in the ground just yet. But we planted some seeds, some little starter seeds inside. And Ariana, with the expectation that perhaps only a 4-year-old can truly embody, is, you know, really thrilled to be part of this process, so we put the seeds in the soil. And she's really excited, like, that first day. And, like, every 10 minutes, she goes and she checks, and she lifts up the little hood to see if there are seeds growing yet, and she checks on them, you know, kind of obsessively for the first day or so, and then maybe even the next day when she wakes up to see if they've suddenly sprouted overnight, you know? And she'll run in and she'll check, and she's looking for these seeds. And she's so excited to see what might happen, eagerly waiting to see what might spring up. But then after a day or so, being 4, she gets a little discouraged. She gets a little discouraged. The seeds are dead. They're not coming to life. They're not going to grow. She kind of stops checking for a little bit. And then when they finally do sprout, one day when she hasn't been looking, and they finally do sprout, seemingly, literally overnight, just shooting up, she comes running in and she checks the plants, and she comes running through the house. Wow, there are plants! And wow, the seeds, they came up! They're growing, they're alive, and then again, every 10 minutes, every half an hour, every morning, and 3 times during the day, she's checking to see how much they've grown. With that sense of eagerness and expectation and anticipation. Perhaps the eagerness with which creation waits for us to grow into who God has called us to be. And certainly with the wonder and the love and the joy that we all should have when we look at all there is around us. Over the past couple weeks, we've been talking about where we see God in the world, and we've been gathering some pictures and ideas about that, and you're, of course, still invited to continue to bring those in and put them up on the cross, but you can begin to see how many of them are natural images, how many of them are little representations of parts of nature where we see God revealed, and where we see the message and the promise of Easter, of joy and of hope in the world around us. This is what we are charged with, the care of this beautiful thing, these many beautiful things. This is the web we are woven into as stewards, as caretakers. But, it's always a but, creation is still groaning in pain, and so are we, because we have not lived into that role as God's children. In fact, not only have we failed to do no harm, we have in fact done immense damage to our planet. It being Earth Week this past week, there are lots of articles and news reports and all sorts of things to gather statistics from, and I gathered some, and then I thought, oh boy, we're going to sit in church and be the most depressed people in the world, because it's depressing stuff. It's frightening stuff. Newsweek reports that the best scientists they can find say it's already too late. If we started finding alternate energy sources now and actually manufacturing them and using them, if we started making changes now, we still would never be able to get the amount of carbon dioxide and pollutants in our atmosphere down to a level so that it would never rise above safe, breathable air. It's too late. We're never going to be able to remove the chemicals from the soil and the water that we've dumped there. That we, the ones who are supposed to be the stewards, the children of God, have just thrown around us. And we're never going to be able to fix it. It is just too far gone. It's dead. This, the place where we see God's presence around us. It's only 2 weeks after Easter. Not 2 weeks ago, we heard a story of another revelation of God's presence. In fact, of God's presence embodied, that was too far gone, too dead, for there to be any hope. Not 2 weeks ago, we heard about how we, humanity, received God's precious gift. The gift that should have been to us the very essence of God among us. The gift that should have been to us all the inspiration and hope and freedom and redemption we would ever need. And rather than cherishing and protecting and worshiping and reverencing that gift, we killed him. And not 2 weeks ago, we heard the story about how nothing is it's too far gone for God. How nothing is so dead that God can't bring life out of it again. And so, I have to believe, with Easter hope, that we can yet do what we are called to do. I have to believe that God would not charge us with the task of being God's children and God's caretakers of the rest of creation if there were not something we could do to live into that calling. And yes, we are part of an intricate web. And whatever string we cut and whatever part we damage, damages the whole, ripples throughout the whole. Whatever we do for ill, we do to the entire web. But I have to also believe that whatever we do for good, we do to the whole web as well. Not 2 weeks ago, we heard that transformation can start small, in one place, with one person or group of people, and can in fact be part of how God is changing the world. So there are some really simple ideas that I think it's not too late to do. What if everyone who drank bottled water decided that they weren't going to do it? Just everybody here. And let's say that saved, well, let's say conservatively, that saved 50 bottles of water a week. Over the course of the year, the people in this room would have prevented 2,500 bottles, plastic bottles, from being used, which means they wouldn't have had to be produced, from being recycled, which means that they wouldn't have had to be recycled into something which eventually goes down the chain and gets thrown away later. Recycling is kind of like just a delay in throwing stuff away sometimes. Or wouldn't have to end up in a landfill right here in our state or down the river somewhere where it comes out. Or what if everybody who went shopping decided they weren't going to bring plastic bags anymore, but you're going to bring your own bags from home, going to bring canvas bags to be reused. Let's say, again, pretty conservatively, I think, that saves 100 bags, plastic bags a week. I probably could contribute about half of those because, you know, you think little seedlings grow fast. You could see four-year-olds, they eat everything. And so, you know, we've got a ton of grocery bags. Let's say we use canvas bags instead, every last one of us. And we save 100 bags a week. 5,200 bags in a year. Bags that take forever to decompose. Bags that usually end up in some animal's habitat somewhere and get wrapped around somebody's head, choking wildlife, leaking their little chemicals out into the natural world. What if every one of us decided that we weren't going to drink coffee when we went to a store out of a paper cup, but we were going to bring our own cup? And what if that only saved, I don't know, 10 cups a week, because we don't go out that much. But that's still, I don't know, 500 or so cups a year that didn't have to be produced, that didn't have to be thrown away or recycled. And what if we decided that, you know what? It's only like a half a mile walk to the state house. What if we decided that we'd like to ask for the state of Vermont to do what they do in California and some parts of Europe, to actually put a tax on things like paper cups and plastic bags and things like that? I mean, when you go to the grocery store, they take 3 cents off your order for every canvas bag you have with you. What if instead they did it the other way around? What if that was one of the things you had to ring in, 3 cents, a plastic bag? What if one of the things you had to ring in when you bought your coffee at a coffee shop was, you know, your coffee costs $1 or $4, depending on where you get it. I go to the $4 places usually because I'm a junkie. Your coffee costs whatever it costs, and the cup is 10 cents. People would think a lot harder about bringing their own cup if they knew they were going to be charged 10 cents extra. I mean, you're already getting charged 10 cents extra most of the time. But now it's right up there. 10 cents more for a cup? I'm bringing my own cup. I don't want to pay 10 cents. I'm already paying $4 for coffee. I don't need to pay you 10 cents for the stinking cup when I have 10 travel mugs at home. What if we decided that these little ideas aren't so little, but because we're woven together in an interconnected web, what we do has an impact on one another, has an impact on the world? I was going to do this for children's time. But I decided it would be more fun with you. Throw it around, mix it up, get yourselves all tangled up. Whoever ends up with the end is going to have to really, there you go. Pass it around. And when you tug on it, everybody gets tugged. If one person suddenly decides it gets woven real tight, and one person suddenly decides they're going to stand up and run out of this room, everybody's going to get tugged along with them. If one person suddenly decides they're going to go up to the altar and kneel down, everybody's going to get dragged that way too. One person decides they're just going to throw it at somebody and hit them in the head. Well, I guess that happens too. Here, we'll keep you going. More string. There's more for where that came from. There you go. Oh, we're really going to make a mess. There you go. I'm going to tie myself up. We're tying the furniture down, too. If one person gets the web of life wrapped around their neck, then all of a sudden we're doing the same thing that spiders do.
Okay, thank you.
Try not to torment Paul too much over there. Here's our web. I guarantee you the web of life is more beautiful and intricate than this. It is more fragile. It is more sacred than this. Because it's not a web made by yarn, and it's not a web even made by a spider. It's a web made by God. It's God's creation. It's God's network. We're Methodists. We know what it is to be connected. We're proud of the way that when we decide we're going to give to a ministry like Native American Ministry Sunday, we are able to do, connected through our connection, we're able to do collectively more than we can do individually. We're proud of the way that what we do in one part of the country can have an impact across the world. And so why not have an impact for the whole world? Why not be the people who say, we're part of this web of life, and we believe that it is God's. We believe that it is sacred. And we are going to change this web. We are going to tug on this web in ways that lift it up rather than ways that pull it apart. I want you to think of one thing you can do. It can be really simple. It can be the paper cup thing or the bottled water thing or the plastic bag thing. Or it can be composting. You know, we just started composting. That's a big thing. We never did that before. It can be planting a garden. It can be recycling. I'm not trying to give it a bad name. It's better than throwing things away. So if you don't recycle, that could be the next project. But one thing that you could do to help the web of life, one thing that you could do to reverence God's creation, and then here's the important part. You've got to tell somebody that you're doing it. Spouses are a good start, or people who live with you are a good start, but perfect strangers are even better. Because that's another point on the web somewhere else that might be impacted. So like when I go out to a restaurant and I have leftover vegetables or something, I'm like, oh, no, no, no. I'm going to take those home and put them in my compost bin. I'm so very excited about doing that. I compost, you know, because, not because it saves money, not because, you know, I bring my own mug because I don't want to pay the 10 cents. I bring my own mug, if somebody asks you. I bring my own mug because I believe that the earth is sacred. And I believe that I am one of the ones charged with reverencing what God has done. I believe that this is a moral responsibility. This is a religious responsibility. This is a spiritual practice for me to bring my own coffee cup when I go to the Langdon Street Cafe. Because I believe that the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it. Because I believe that we are woven together in a web. And whatever we do to the web, for good or for ill, we do to one another. We do to ourselves, we do to God's creation, and we therefore do to God. Amen.